Welcome to Refirement Life, the podcast for anyone navigating life transitions or planning to make life transitions to ensure your next years are your best years. Listen in for insightful, generous, and sometimes humorous conversation. It's time to get fired up with Christine Zamuda and Muge Wood, your hosts for this latest episode of Refirement Life.
We did.
Okay. All right. Awesome. Hello, everyone. Today, my awesome co-host Christine and I are excited to welcome a very special guest to our podcast, Alex Condon. Alex is a leader in the medical field, and today our theme is driving medical breakthroughs with data. In the age of AI, in the age of innovation, data continues to carry a huge role in what it can provide us with for research, for innovation, and Alex is very much in the midst of it. In addition to that, I am really excited to have Alex because he and I met some time ago when we were on the Digital Tech Committee of Greater Houston Partnership. So Greater Houston Partnership is a, you can think of it as like a Chamber of Commerce for Houston. It brings together a cross-section of leaders. Alex and I were on the committee for creating opportunity through tech jobs in Houston. I always have highest respect for Alex for bringing innovative ideas to the table that are inclusive, that are creative. So that is our connection. And then I've been following Alex from a distance a bit through LinkedIn posts, etc. And so is Journey in the world of startup and technology. And I think that fits quite well with our theme of navigating through change and creating opportunity for ourselves and others. So with that, Alex, welcome. Maybe we can kick it off with, in your words, your background, so our listeners can get to know you a bit, and then we can dive deeper into the work that you do.
Sure. Well, first off, thank you so much for having me on. Sincerely appreciate it. I'm Alex Condon. I'm the COO and co-founder of a company that was called Galen Data. We're a medical device cloud data management platform. So that's a bunch of buzzwords. But what essentially it means is that we help medical device companies that have some sort of kind of data aggregation need, centralize all their data in the cloud. And then once it's there, they can kind of build views of that data for clinicians or for patients. They can run algorithms close to the data. They can kind of create analytics and notifications, reports, and kind of get that data into the electronic health record, all as kind of like a platform. And it's kind of interesting how this spun out. This was, we were actually working for a NASA contractor when I first met Muge, and the rigor of creating spaceflight software is very similar to medical device software. So where our office is in Houston, Texas, there's actually like a density of medical device software companies that are working down there. That's kind of the origin story. Prior to that, I was working in the financial management field. So kind of my career has gone financial management, to a NASA contractor and now, medical device company that recently exited back in, November of last year, and has since been kind of merged into a new entity that I, continue to stay on with.
Very cool. Good trend of just surrounding yourself with very smart people, yourself included, just, you know, going from one industry to another, but they're all kind of connected with math and science and
I've been lucky to always be the dumbest guy in the room. And as I think everyone should strive to be.
It is amazing. I think, Alex, you call out the benefit of intersection of different disciplines. I think when we look at energy medical space and the data intensive aspect of it, the impact on security and privacy and high stakes, of outcomes. So that is fascinating, and how that inspired you to take the next step. Could you share a little bit more on the possibilities we may see in the transformation of the medical field with data? What can we be excited about? And what I am thinking is, like, how can we find faster cure for tough stuff? I jumped to that in my mind immediately. How are you looking at it?
So for us, we kind of create the platform that allows a lot of medical device companies to kind of gather their data in one place so that they can kind of iterate on it and create new innovations, right? So we see across the board all these kinds of digital devices, you know, any modality. It could be, wearables, implantables, things by the bedside, something they call software medical as a medical device, which is kind of algorithms that might scan an image or something like this. Everyone's trying to aggregate their data with the idea of doing things with it in the future. So I would say when it comes to AI, even though you hear a lot of these breakthrough stories, there's still a lot of kind of amazing concepts that are still in their infancy. So from the Galen data perspective, we help companies kind of aggregate all their data in one place so that they can kind of create future innovations based off of that data. And we see a lot of medical devices, virtually all digital devices, having this kind of need and this desire on a go-forward basis. I would say when it comes to diagnostics, there are all kinds of opportunities that have arisen. Software as a medical device is this term that I mentioned before, that basically it using software to do things like scan imagery to try to detect things like cancer. We've seen a lot of maybe visualization tools that are built in surgery to help make sure that people kind of can get all of the cancer out of them. When it comes to the bio space, there's an enormous amount of money being spent to try to uncover new drugs via AI. Even when it comes to things that you think are very simple, like a cardiac monitoring device, there's all kinds of data as you get stronger and stronger sensors that you're able to basically derive new innovations from. So I think that we're really on the precipice. I think the hard part about medical device and kind of AI in general is there's a lot of promise, but it also takes a lot of money. The time to market is very long and the adoption cycle can be very slow. So you see all these kind of flashy ideas. It'll take a long time for a lot of those to kind of come to fruition, but there is no lack of desire in the community to get those things fast-tracked as fast as kind of regulations and innovation will allow.
Yeah. And I think the service that you would offer companies who are trying to execute on those breakthroughs is really important. As we think about like ChatGPT being such a common way for people to engage and get answers and use AI in the practical, you know, businesses with proprietary technology and things that they're not ready to share with the world could use essentially a private cloud with the backing of all of the help and support for data analytics.
I think that one of the key things inside of our industry is that worry. IP is such a critical part of kind of a medical device's valuation. Mm-hmm. You see a lot of kind of people setting up, no data retention agreements and things like this with some of these big platforms out there, because prior to that kind of thought, they were putting in all kinds of proprietary data, and now they're having to kind of walk it back because in a lot of cases, you don't exactly know where the data could end up going, right? And with things like HIPAA and GDPR, it's very critical that kind of you have this privacy first mindset when you approach those kinds of tools and medical innovation.
Mm-hmm. That's exciting.
Yeah, absolutely. I think when we talk about creating a platform that allows people to innovate the data gathering, input, output for the devices, bedside and wearables, what are some of the innovative elements, Alex, Galen Data may bring to this problem that may help facilitate this? Because it is a pretty tough problem.
I think that when it comes to what we do in specific, We have partnerships with different companies that focus on algorithm development. And one of the ways that we kind of help companies fast track, for example, we have a partnership with a company called BeSecure that's based in Northern Ireland. They have a myriad of FDA cleared kind of cardiac algorithms that cardiac companies can kind of plug and play and use inside of our platform. So these are things that have been validated that can help tremendously fast track a company on their go-to-market. You know, one of the main things that we see is kind of a problem inside of the medical space is there were a lot of companies that were coming to market with tools that had been validated against a very small population size. I was talking to somebody at one of the major hospitals in the country, and they were trying to get sold a tool that had only been validated against 16 patients. And that's not enough. You know, not only is it one thing to have a snapshot in time of patients, but you know, patient you know, all over the world, you change relative to your environment or, you know, economic issues, whatever it is. So you have a changing data lake, right, as you march through time of new things that have impacted the current patient population. So they basically had this idea that you needed to somehow validate against a much larger data set these kinds of tools before they go to market. So for us to be able to offer partners that have done this already and be able to kind of offer back these kind of robust tools, in particular in this cardiac monitoring space, that kind of opportunity is one that we're very excited about. We'd like to extend that to all different kinds of therapies. If there's somebody, you know, doing stuff in neuro, or maybe somebody who's, you know, doing stuff in oncology, be able to kind of offer validated tools that can help companies get from A to B a lot faster so they can help patients a lot quicker.
Yeah, very cool. Very cool. Yeah, it's amazing, like when you think about how fast you can push things forward, but at the same time, how much is at risk if things aren't done right?
It is a massive risk. I just probably you guys read this too. Read about the heart transplant that has been performed with robotic surgery and minimum incision in Houston Methodist, I think, or was it Baylor? Mm-hmm. One of the flagship medical institutions, and almost first of its kind. So just cannot mm-hmm. imagine the amount of risk that goes into innovation and what is at stake. But when you have the breakthrough, then it opens up enormous potential. So I think, you know, when we think about entrepreneurship, startups, taking any new idea to market, we always, think about risk reward. And this one is probably the epitome of that to make those decisions. So in your research and work, Alex, robotic surgery is also considered medical device that would connect that with data.
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely. And there's that idea of kind of autonomous surgery being something in the future, I think will probably come sooner rather than later. That one actually seems to be kind of one of the low hanging pieces of fruit. But back to your other example, kind of about patient bravery and this, that kind of thing. One of the places where I'm kind of most passionate is there's brain computer interfaces, BCIs, they kind of call them. And these are, they used to be always kind of like an implant that would go inside of the head, you know, through kind of a hole in the skull. And they would do things like, for example, allow a paralyzed patient to be able to move limbs. Right. Mm-hmm. Something like this. This is an extremely dangerous surgery. It's only, I think the technology has been around since like the 1980s, but there's only been maybe less than 80 procedures that have been done through that time because patients are so fearful of someone kind of going into their head that they'd rather stay paralyzed than otherwise. And now with technology, we have, you know, have, for example, like CAPS that can start gathering that data remotely without having to go through the brain. And that was actually just talking to a company in Toronto that's building such a device for people with locked-in syndrome. So this mm-hmm. is people who basically have lost their ability to move and lost their ability to speak. And it's a horrifying, you know, quality of life. But to mm-hmm. be able to kind of, you know, take remote sensing off of the brain, aggregate that data, come up with these come up with signals that basically allow this person to regain their speech, albeit virtually or robotically, or through a simulated voice, where they would have never had otherwise, and be able to communicate with their families in a way that is very profound for someone who had no hope, not a decade ago.
That's amazing. I read a big article about that in The Atlantic last month. It was all about that particular syndrome and what is being done and how those families have struggled and all of the miracles that have also happened along the way. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah, I would imagine also patients is amazing. Yeah, meeting with patients is these people are extremely brave individuals that have gone through some of the earlier procedures. So to see that basically their risk has created a future reward for patients with the same with the same malady, it's amazing.
Right. I would imagine a more common use case too could be Parkinson's, because of the Michael J. Fox surgery that also requires an implant, and that could also be benefited from just anything that's less intrusive to get to the surgery.
We have a fantastic client of ours in Boston who's working on an anti-tremor device that basically can mitigate hand tremors and allow people functionality inside their hands. And another big data play there. It's not always kind of the trendiest things, like oncology, and we're talking about kind of brain computer interfaces. Sometimes it's the these devices that would just help people in their daily lives that are looking data first.
Wow. So I imagine in your job, you're constantly learning. It must be incredibly fun, incredibly exciting. If we just think about the journey that you had when you created the company, what started that whole process? Like, how did you go from working in a larger company to deciding this was an opportunity you wanted to go with both feet in?
Sure. So, as I mentioned at the beginning, the kind of the rigor of class 3 medical device software is very similar to spaceflight software. And so we were kind of getting tapped on the shoulder all the time at the NASA contractor I was working for to build kind of custom cloud solutions for big pharma and big medical device companies. And so that endeavor is very expensive, anywhere between kind of $500,000 and $2 million US dollars to build bespoke software packages. It requires a lot of time, anywhere between kind of 6 and 18 months of development time. And then once all that's done, it's kind of handed off to the medical device company to manage thereafter, and they become more responsible for all the cybersecurity, privacy, and regulatory concerns. So we saw this repeated pattern of companies asking for essentially the same requirements. And we said, why can't we productize this the same way that you've seen a lot of kind of commercial consumer devices be brought to market that are connected, which is I build the widget and then I use an outsourced third party to kind of do all the things that I need. So we said, well, why don't we just take all these requirements and build something for medical device? So we knew that the market need was out there. And then as soon as we got our first couple clients with this kind of platform approach to medical device cloud infrastructure, it was validated. And that's kind of where we've been growing ever since. And, we have clients we're working with now, and North America, UK, EU, Israel, Africa, Southeast Asia, Australia, New Zealand, so all over the world, kind of helping them get to patients faster and safer.
So would you say because of the demand was there and the patterns were there, you felt a little bit more secure taking this big risk for yourself? And
100%. For us, the path traveled wasn't as scary as it might be for some, but it still required, I think, the same gumption to get going. So we were coming out of a services industry, again, kind of servicing government contracts, and we were a product, and you have to think about product a different way when you go to market. We didn't have the financial backing to basically be able to run this thing internally and spin it out without having to go raise money. So we had to follow kind of the traditional startup trajectory in the space by kind of, building something, getting some initial kind of market feedback, raising money, and then from there kind of the normal kind of organic growth of a SaaS company thereafter. So we were fortunate we didn't have to be kind of ramen noodle soup founders to agree. we exchanged kind of equity with the company that we spun out of to kind of keep the lights on and keep us fed. But then after that, it was a lot of, you know, go out and, you know, you eat what you kill. So I had to go out there and go to market.
Right. Ramen. I hadn't heard that term before, ramen soup founder.
Yeah, that's a good one. It's like a college student diet, but it can also it can also go into entrepreneurship. So, Alex, as you navigate these different pathways, because you could stay probably with what you were doing for NASA. You could have taken a different path. How do you navigate these inflection points to say, okay, I will go take this path, and when you take it. Some of it may be rewarding. Some of it could be challenging. What is your mindset in thinking through that?
I think that, you know, when you are working for any kind of government contractor, you're very beholden to other people's decisions, right? It's a very bureaucratic process. You're a lot of times winning grants and things like this, contracts to sustain the business. Over time, you know, the winners of those contracts might change. There's a lot of kind of volatility in that space. And I wanted something that was kind of less volatile. I wanted something also that still kind of fulfilled that altruistic itch, right, that you get when you're working with something like NASA. But I wanted something that could also move fast. And a lot of times when you have a decision tree that might be very long, innovation can feel kind of slow. So even though people, when they think about NASA, they think about this innovation, you know, based organization that, you know, goes back, you know, to the late 50s and 60s, when you're actually in it, if you are kind of a fast-minded person when it comes to growth and innovation and things like this, sometimes you can feel a bit stymied. You might work on very cool ideas, but at the end, you know, a lot of people are happy if just one thing they worked on kind of flies. So you can spin your wheels a lot. And so for me, it was really just about having something that I could kind of wrap my arms around, take as quickly or as slowly as I needed to, depending on the situation, but really just kind of get something started that was my own, along with the two other co-founders, we all see very eye to eye that we could kind of march to our own pace and still kind of feel like we were doing a great bit of good, because I think that is kind of a thread that all three of us had when we wanted something, you know, from a life's work.
That's incredible. Thank you so much for that perspective, because you called out several things there that I think are really important to reflect on. One is I think there may have been a time where we may think government jobs are secure, and that's not necessarily the case. What is secure or the path that you could be taking is always changing. A particular skill that may have been in fashion perhaps has changed. So the need to reflect on that. Also the other point you mentioned, Alex, being driven with mission purpose work, where you want to make a tremendous difference that scales, that affects many, and the importance of that on the energy, motivation, and drive that you can bring to your work. And I think, you know, that cannot be understated, the importance of that. So it's great to be at the intersection of that, which I would imagine would help maybe the tougher times, you know, easier to handle as well, because of that belief and opportunity and possibility is that that you can see.
Yeah, I think that in the medical device realm, it takes a village to get a product to market. There are so many different kind of milestones you have to pay attention to, so many risks. It requires, you know, so much knowledge base that it's hard for young entrepreneurs to kind of wrap their heads around all the different things they might need to touch from a regulatory or privacy perspective, all of the different things they have to go through with their clinical trials, supply chain. All of these things are kind of tough, especially if you have a passionate person who's trying to take something to market. So we've always tried to look at it as kind of, you know, try to support the medical device companies that work with us as best we can. So through connections, whether it be to other service providers or to venture or maybe someone who can help them with a grant or, you know, different kinds of opportunities, because we know it's so difficult, and it's it's amazing to see those companies flourish and know that we basically played some small part in that path traveled, even if they're not a client of ours. Maybe their device isn't at a level of maturity yet, but getting companies across the finish line to the point where they are in commercial sales is one of the most gratifying things that we've been able to feel as a company.
Yeah, that's quite the legacy. Christine, were you about to jump in?
I was just thinking that, yeah, in terms of that legacy, you're not only helping those organizations, but then all of the people they service. Like that, it's a perfect like pebble in the water of impact, and maybe in your case, it's like a huge cannonball. Like it's just like huge impact because you have so many people that are being touched by the technology enablement that you all are providing these organizations. That's gotta feel so fulfilling.
It does, but I do feel often kind of like the pebble, because when you interface with a lot of these entrepreneurs that are, you know, geniuses in their field and stuff like this, that have worked on these kinds of, innovations, for half their career or something like this, you know, in the end, we're very much kind of picks and shovels, but we do feel that reverberation quite a bit. When you actually meet the people who have taken tremendous risks, it takes a lot of money to get a medical device to market. It takes a lot of career risk, especially if you're stepping out of being a physician or something like this, or a researcher that's making, you know, a decent amount of money to start that entrepreneurial spirit. So I would say, all recognition should go to the founders of those kinds of companies, and we're just happy to be here and support.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's a big value chain of innovation where everyone has a distinct part, and to Christine's point, when it comes together, the effect is really multiplied. So changing topics a bit, Alex, I think you always not only bring innovation to medical community, but you also think about the communities that you're in to create opportunity for the individuals. And that's how we met, opportunity to create economic prosperity in our communities. And you always brought new ideas to the table. So as you look at community opportunity and prosperity, what are ways by which that you think we can think about that, we can take part in it, any specific ideas or opportunities that you're thinking about these days?
I think that, you know, in our case, kind of working towards bettering the city of Houston, there's a tremendous amount of intellectual capital there. There's a lot of very kind of young, ambitious talent. And I think that trying to kind of marry those two is one of the things that I thought kind of had the most impact. So like that idea of kind of mentorship, being able to give young people kind of firsthand ability to talk to entrepreneurs or leaders in the community like yourself, to kind of inspire them and show them that basically these kinds of path traveled aren't too far away from kind of probably the trajectory that they're going down today. So make those kinds of intangible things very tangible. I think that that's very important, especially for young people. In terms of just kind of growing the community, I think that, you know, we've spoken about this before, but Houston kind of has this slant as being a place that you would go to work and not a place you necessarily go to live. And I think that a lot of big cities kind of have that thing if they're kind of a business first city. So I think that educating people on all the opportunities exist inside their ecosystem, both on the professional side, but also on just the kind of the fun and leisure side, and trying to get people to, enjoy life in a city has all kinds of intangibles. And I think that from that kind of happy community, you can grow a lot of collaboration, and through collaboration, you can grow a lot of economic opportunity.
That is that's incredible. I remember our conversations where when we think about a city like Houston, it's the fourth largest city in the U.S. I think it still is. It's certainly known for certain things, you know, the world class medical center, energy industry. But, you know, to your point, it's not probably a place people make ton of plan to go on vacation to. And then it competes with Austin, etc. That also has some other cool things. But when we look holistically, basically the intangible opportunity to bring it to forefront and combining capital with talent. Because a lot of times the economic growth, we always talk about, okay, where is the talent for a particular skill set? Is it close to a university? Being able to cultivate that, and sometimes it takes more work because it's not obvious, but yet those are the very instances where the opportunity exists. Because when it is so obvious, everyone is there already. Maybe there is the opportunity is almost not fantastic. So it is great to think along those lines. As part of your navigation, Alex, you also have relocated from Houston to Phoenix. You are keeping a connection in both Houston and Phoenix besides other places. How was that move for you? And what are you most excited about as you navigate that geographical move as well?
Sure. So I grew up here in Phoenix, Arizona, which is where I'm taking this this conversation from today. I moved to Houston when I was 28 years old, and I stayed there for 12 years. And I think it's kind of a standard story. You know, my parents are aging, and a lot of my kind of childhood friends are here. So I felt that it was time to move, and thankful to technology to kind of allow that to happen. But to your point, I'm trying to kind of have my cake and eat it too. I'm in Houston every, fifth or sixth week, where I stay there for a week interfacing with the people inside of our office, but also being able to have a lot more of those kind of close business connections, being able to maintain those. And kind of have my personal life and then have my professional life, both hopefully, as this transition matures, flourish. But it's nice to be back here. There are things about the desert that I like a lot. There's things about Texas I like a lot. And regarding the move specifically, very long drive. Very long drive. thankfully, West Texas is very kind of flat and in a straight line. I'm not the biggest fan of driving U-Hauls, but it was able to get here safely with nothing damaged. So, looking forward to also, kind of helping build this local ecosystem here in Arizona. Arizona has a large, bio community. Not a lot in the med device space. So being able to kind of interface with new people and have kind of the same conversations that we might have had in Houston a few years ago in kind of a less mature ecosystem is something that I'm enjoying also very much. So, plant new seeds in a new place, but, keep watering the plants back in Houston so that they can continue to grow.
Yeah. That is awesome. So glad, Alex, you're keeping tabs in both communities and do the cross-pollination. When I talk to some of my colleagues and friends who live in Phoenix, Arizona, there's a lot of tech innovation I understand is happening there as well, especially with the Arizona State University, et cetera. So a lot of excitement there. And I hear you on the drive because you cannot leave Texas for a long time to get to another state. Did you drive by Big Bend National Park by any chance? Were you in the vicinity of that?
I did. I think that one of the things that was nice was I had a small U-Haul, so I was able to kind of make those side adventures and stuff like this. I am a huge fan of Big Bend. I'm a huge fan of just kind of the national park system and kind of getting out of your element in general. I think, so much of our lives now is kind of predicated on work and on, Zoom calls and all these kinds of things. So when people have a chance to basically, get out into the great outdoors, that's one of the things that I'm kind of most passionate about. And Big Bend is a very special place. I think it's an underrated national park. If people aren't familiar, it's a massive national park that basically touches the Mexico border in far west Texas, and it requires a lot of commitment to get out there. I think from Houston, mm-hmm. you're talking something like a 9-hour drive to be able to see it. But once you're there, it stands on its own against any national park in the system. And so I highly recommend it. And then there's also great, cool little funky towns out there in West Texas, like Marfa and Alpine and places like that, where you can have a cool experience, interesting restaurants, cool art exhibitions and these kinds of things while you're out there taking in the great outdoors.
Yeah. I have an artist friend in Marfa, and he's always selling me on come explore it. You love it.
I've been out there like 8 times, I think. So a lot of miles on the car. I cannot recommend the city more.
Yeah.
It's fantastic.
I'll have to give you his gallery. I'll give you his contact so you can stop.
It's a small place. I might have already visited it, and I would love to. Yeah, I would love to have that name.
Very nice.
So, as we wind down, I'll close. I'll ask Alex to share maybe what he would like us to walk away with. But one thing I'm walking away with that is unexpected outcome, which is why I love these podcasts so much, is having lived in Texas for almost 30 plus years, I have not been to Big Bend. I have not been to Marfa. Christine, I may have to convince you to do an art trip with me. That's one good takeaway that I am thinking about already. With that, Alex, it's been an absolute pleasure to hear your perspective, because this is a dimension maybe we take for granted at times, meaning medical devices is just there, data is coming and going, and we take it for granted, and like the brain computer interface, don't think about it in that sense. So thank you for opening our minds to possibilities. As we wrap up, any takeaways that you would like our listeners to walk away with?
Sure. I would say the one that I would kind of came to mind as we were talking through this was just take that first step. And I know that this is something that probably a lot of people mention, but it's totally true. It's very, if you find something that you're passionate about and you take that first step, you create far more inertia than I think that people realize, right? I think that a lot of people feel kind of burdened with this, I have to come up with a perfect idea or something like this. But if you just make one step in the right direction, you can kind of go very far. One of the things that I think about to myself, and this is totally an aside, is, you know, if I need to clean up some part of my place, if I just pick up like 3 things, all of a sudden, then I come back and I've put in motion a machine that will clean the rest of my living space by just doing something small. And I think that translates also into entrepreneurship. And even if what you're doing doesn't work out, the learnings along the way for what's next are tremendous. And that's not something lost me also. So I would say go out there, take a first step, and let that carry you, down your own entrepreneurial path.
Yeah. Great advice. It's just to get started. Forward progress is progress. And taking those steps, even if they're small, like you said, will likely lead to something if you just keep pushing.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
That first step.
Yep. Mm-hmm. just like one small step for mankind, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Bringing it full circle to NASA.
all the way back. We launched and landed, yeah.
Yeah, that's right. And that small step actually has just as significance on planet Earth as it did on the surface of the moon. So, and there's just so much learning. My husband likes to refer to it as experiential learning. You just have to start, and the momentum you gain from that is amazing. By the way, Alex, we did an episode on decluttering, and this has become a key topic as well. One small step at a time. So it has been a pleasure on this Friday to connect. Lot to think about, and thank you again, Alex. I have so many favorite aspects of this podcast, and one is connecting with friends and colleagues, even when our paths diverge a little bit, but come back and learn and catch up. So we certainly have done that. Thank you again, and best of luck as you traverse multiple states and drive innovation globally also in the process.
The pleasure is all mine. It's been an honor, and thank you so much for the opportunity. I really enjoyed myself.
Yeah, so delightful having you here. So with that, yeah, we'll sign off, everyone. Until next time.
Thank you for listening. Our hope is to spark a little joy, inspire, and educate our listeners in ways to live an even more meaningful life. If you have reactions to share from what you've heard, please visit our website, refirement.life, to leave a voice message. You may even be featured in a future episode. To keep in touch, subscribe to our podcast, Refirement Life, using the podcast player of your choice. Always remember, you are never too old to set a new goal or to dream a new dream. Thanks again for joining us on this episode. Until next time.